What's up, and welcome to Espresso with Erin and Sarit, the show where you go to gain the confidence and self-empowerment that you need to live your best and most authentic life.
Tough love conversations to reveal the simple truths that will transform your relationships, your body, and your bank account.
We are your hosts. I'm Erin.
And I'm Sarit.
And we are on a mission to transform the lives of millions through the same fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, and financial habits that have transformed ours.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today's guest is a true example of someone who uses her own life adversity to empower others. Chris Buchanan is a field hockey Olympic athlete turned entrepreneur. She's the founder and CEO of Good Anya, an organic eatery and food brand based in Encinitas, California. She's passionate about sourcing the very best ingredients and making real food and drinks that help people feel good. And trust me, it's 100% true. Chris, welcome to the show.
You guys, so much for having me. It's so fun to see all these faces.
They're awesome. This community is epic, and I know that you're going to align with them so well. And by the way, for anybody who is like a SoCal local, trust me when I say this, you have to check out the place. We're going to talk about Good Anya in just a second. But, you know, first thing first, like, let's talk about how it all started. So, I mean, obviously, you've been through a lot of life transitions. I mean, you know, field hockey to, you know, being in the Olympics to now starting your own gig. How did you very first get introduced to field hockey in the first place?
Yeah, not a very common sport. It's the third most played sport in the world behind cricket. And that's because the whole world plays it, really, but the U.S., you know, so all of Asia, South America, all of Europe. So there's a lot of people out there. India, it's right up there with cricket. So it's massive and it's a really cool sport. But in my high school in San Diego, it was the sport to play. I almost didn't play it because you had to wear those little skirts and I was too embarrassed. But the other option was volleyball. And in my era, they wore the little underwear things, not like the shorts. So I was like, okay, it's either the skirt or the underwear. So I went with field hockey. A lot of my friends played it. And yeah, I mean, we lost one game in high school. So we were just sort of a powerhouse back then. And luckily I got a full ride to Iowa. And at the time, the East Coast is really the main hub of field hockey in the US. So Iowa kind of latched on to one of our older players. And then she was really good. And every year after that, they would kind of pluck another player from our team. And then that was kind of made California field hockey known to the rest of the country. We had five of our girls on the Iowa team at one point. So it was pretty cool. It opened up California for other kids. And yeah, I didn't pay for a dime for college. So I was really lucky because I wouldn't have been able to afford to go. So it was a real, real blessing and honor, especially to be a female athlete at that time at Iowa. There was a female athletic director. It was just a very supportive, progressive state and town, Iowa City. I don't know what happened recently to Iowa. But anyway, we won't bring the election up. But yeah, it was just a great, great place to go to school.
That's awesome. So by the way, where did you go to high school in San Diego?
It's called Sarah High School down in Tirasana, where I was born.
Okay. So you're a San Diego local. And, you know, for those of you guys who are listening and who are taking notes, like something that you should drop down is, you know, the concept of creating opportunities for yourself through sports. And, you know, Chris, this conversation is about you, but if there's one thing that I can add that I can totally relate to you on that, this is actually how I got to this country. I got a full ride to play tennis for a school in New Jersey because I was born and raised in Israel. But I got recruited to play in school. So, you know, for all I know, and I know that this is what they do in other countries, they're like, be great at sports so that you can make it to college in the US without paying anything. And then, you know, you're like, you will figure it out. And it's 100% true. But, you know, let's talk about field hockey for one sec. I mean, nobody gets to the Olympics by accident. So let's talk about, you know, what goes on in your head. So like when you very first started playing field hockey, was the Olympics a goal? Like, oh yeah, like I'm going to make it to the Olympics. Like that's the dream.
You know, I think for me as a little kid, it was the dream. I don't know. It's probably my dad got us into sports really early. I played baseball with all the boys instead of softball. And this was in the 70s. So it was when all of those little leagues started happening. You know, he literally started the first basketball league in Terracina, and it was all usually boys who played. And I had two brothers, so I played with them and wanted to do what girls were doing if my brothers were doing something different. Of course, part of our early on, and I almost, my dream was actually to play basketball because Miller was my hero. And I played basketball since I was five. You know, everyone told me I was too short. And there was a moment in high school where you have to choose and focus on one thing. And I, you know, depending on what camps you would go to. And so I chose field hockey because I was better, but I was pretty good at basketball too. And I got a few scholarship offers for basketball. But when you see the campus at Iowa and what they were offering me, it was just such a dream. And I get there and both the point guards on Iowa's team are 5'3" and 5'6". So I was, it was a really early on lesson that, like, man, don't let anyone tell you what you can't do. You know, a lot of my, it was with good intentions, you know, I mean, I was better at field hockey, but I could have played basketball in college, but I'm glad I didn't. I like the way my life turned out.
Good. So everything in life happens for a reason, but you said something that was super powerful and, you know, like being told that, you know, you're too short or too whatever, and believing that that is true and, you know, limiting your abilities and then, you know, having find out that, oh, you know, there was still an opportunity. So I'm glad that you don't regret going the field hockey route. But let's talk about, okay, like, you, so you made it to college and let's talk about the adversities that you've had to overcome, because I'm sure that playing for the NCAAs is, again, it's not like making it to the Olympic team. Like, what did you have to do in order to qualify?
Well, you know, I think everyone in my life sort of had this expectation all the time. And then when I got to college, coach was a 3-time Olympian. It was just sort of expected. I mean, we went to the Final Four all 4 years of college. So we were a really good team. We came in second, third, fourth, and second. We never won. So that's also super annoying. But it was expected. It was just what you, and then because we were good, you go to camps. So I was just in the camp system and sort of in that system. And I kept having successes really early on. And then it just feeds on itself. But we trained all year, almost every day. It was who we were as people. It was what our whole life was about. I mean, I tell people all the time, I definitely majored in field hockey. I mean, school was not a priority at all. It was just a means to make it to the US team, honestly.
So you said something really interesting. You said that your coach was a 3-time Olympian. And, you know, something that we always say is that you become who you surround yourself with.
Yeah.
So now it sounds as if, you know, like the team was really bonded and you guys like ate and breathed and practiced and, you know, competed and field hockey. And I'm not even sure if like in field hockey, you guys use these words like competed. So excuse my language if I'm butchering it. But do you think that, let's say if you were to take away the element of the coach that you had, but still keep all the players that you had, do you think you would have had the chance of making it as far as you did?
I mean, yes, because we were at such a good school. But this woman, Beth Beglin in particular, anytime we wanted to, she would get out like a bucket of balls and go to the turf field and just help us. She called them individuals. So she was there to help us, you know, achieve our dreams. And the 92 qualifying team or qualifying for the Olympics, a 92 qualifying tournament happened during my senior year. So I actually had to take that year off from college. And we had a big class of freshmen. And so by the time we were seniors, we, you know, we went to the Final Four, even though I wasn't there and a few other girls weren't there. There was 3 key players that took off to go to the national team to try to qualify for the Spain Olympics. And we left our senior season. And that probably was our best chance of the 4 years to actually win the national championship. And she knew that and we knew that, but it was the Olympics. And so she's like, you have to do it. You have to go. And she coached for a really long time, a lot of Final Four teams, and she never won the national championship. And she's the most competitive person I know. So I know that that was one of the most unselfish and hard decisions that she did, but she did it for us. And, you know, even us 3 that chose to go, she put us over the team too, which it wasn't an easy choice. And we didn't even qualify for Spain. We were too young of a team at that point. But so I think she had a lot to do with it for sure.
I love it. So that being the case, I can only assume then that your college career has lasted for 5 years instead of 4 because of that.
Yeah, luckily I graduated in 4.5, so I had to stay on, but I took a lot of correspondence courses.
What a go-getter.
Well, let me just tell you, I got to Iowa from California and it's the first snow and all that started happening. And I was like, whoa, this is real. I, you know, I had been to Big Bear. I had been to like SeaWorld when I was little and went down those little hills. It was big time. I didn't have the clothes. I was not prepared. And so I literally went into my counselor's office and I was like, what do I got to do to graduate in 4 years? Just tell me. And so I just made sure I took that amount of classes and I wasn't taking biochem, right? Like it wasn't that hard. And I was a real athletic school. So I actually made the national team my sophomore year. So I was gone a lot and I had to take classes by mail. And let's just say that they weren't that hard.
Wow, by mail before it was all virtual.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Faxing stuff in. Whoa.
That's crazy. So the reason why I'm asking that is because for those of you guys who are watching or listening, you know, we talk about the concept of when you have a goal, you got to make sacrifices. So whenever you hear these speakers share their life story, it's always really important as a student to ask yourself, what can I learn from their own life experience? And, you know, Chris, like your goal is like, yes, you wanted to graduate college. I'm pretty sure that everybody goes to college in order to graduate. But it seemed as if that was a secondary goal because with like your eye was on the Olympics and therefore you've made a sacrifice, which obviously, you know, made your college career last a little bit longer. But, you know, being the go-getter that you are, you harmonized it and you're like, okay, how can I finish in 4.5 years instead of 5?
Yeah.
But you had to make a sacrifice in order to make it happen, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was really interested in film and I majored in communications, but there was just a lot of classes I couldn't take because I wasn't there. So I had to, you know, we basically played our hockey season in the fall. And once the spring came and summer, I was usually away with the US team traveling the world. So it was a different type of education, obviously.
Right. And then let's talk about real quick before we transition into the entrepreneurial route about what would you say are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned from field hockey that transferred over to life in general?
I have a really specific example. We hire a lot of first-time kids for bussers and hosts and some even baristas and stuff. So restaurants are first-time jobs sometimes. So when you're thinking about leaving that Yelp review, just remember that it's the first-time job for people. It takes a lot of training. But I can tell the kids that were athletes, there's something that you learn that you don't realize you're learning. So it's, and as cheesy as it sounds, I guess in a word, it's teamwork. They understand. They also understand how to work hard and kind of get through something that's difficult without complaining. We had a kid who never had any chores, who was never on a team, and she cried when we made her clean the bathroom. I mean, she was like absolutely devastated, didn't know how to sweep. So she just didn't understand the concept of hard work or, you know, helping your teammates. And I think it's just something that's really cool. You know, from the time that you're 5, when the drill's over, you go help and you collect the balls. Or if one of your teammates is down and out, you have a talk with them and try to help them. It's so many lessons. So I always encourage parents, even if the kids aren't going to be the best, just let them play something with a team. And even kids that I coach for a really long time that weren't that good. I was like, look, when you get to college, join an intramural team, even join a sorority. We played sorority girls I played intramural basketball for a while in college. And we play the sorority girls would come up on our roster and I'd be like, oh, we're going to kick their ass, right? They're sorority girls. And they were actually always really good. And I felt like it was because they were maybe weren't good enough to be on a team when they got to college, but they seeked out a group to be friends with and play sports with. And they were all really good. They surprised me, but you know, we weren't going to lose to like the sorority girls because we were the athletes.
Right. You had the other element of practice.
We had a little bit more, but yeah, I just think it's something in your life that is really valuable for sure.
Is there anything else that you would say has carried over from field hockey to life?
You know, I think the traveling around the world made me open and diverse and just a little bit more empathetic. I think that was an education that just makes your mind open for all people. You know, when you're traveling at 17, 18, and you see poverty or you see people of different races, you're just learning stuff. You know, maybe it's a cab driver in Korea that's nice to you. And so now you're not, you have a personal experience with meeting someone like that versus being in a sheltered, closed environment where you don't see anyone different from yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? And as a foreigner too, this is something that foreigners always discuss about Americans. So all of the Americans, I'm just going to tell you guys this, like, you know, straight as it is, but you know, it seems as if Americans in general, for the most part, live in a bubble. And, you know, Erin and I have discussed it because she was born in the US. And, you know, when she came to visit Israel, like, her mind was blown. And the reality is that I think that most Americans are just so sheltered that way because they don't know anything different. And I also feel like that is why this, especially in the 21st century, like, the sense of entitlement. It's like, look, you haven't seen other parts of the world and you're probably not even aware of all the gifts that you have in this country alone and like all of the opportunities that you've got. And it's like, you know, when you see other people and you are having conversations and you're seeing how they live, you're like, man, like I really have this good. And you don't know what you don't know. And I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, there was a good friend of mine there. Her in-laws were very wealthy, Rancho Santa Fe, and they had never left the U.S. They would only go to Hawaii to vacation because it was America. She ended up being divorced from their son, but so she was from Mexico City originally, and the grandma would tell the kids like, "Ooh, how was Mexico? Was it dirty?" You know, she would say little things like that, and she was just obviously furious at the in-laws, but yeah, very sheltered. And it's really, really sad. You know, we also traveled at my time during the first, I just turned 50 on Saturday, right? So I'm a little.
What? I would never think. And a happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I was a little bit of a milestone, but I think it was during the first Bush's presidency. And there was a moment when, you know, America, we've never had very good style with our clothes compared to Europe and places we're traveling. So we would have our big red, white, and blue sweats, right? Super just embarrassing. There was a time when we couldn't travel with USA on our clothes. So our sponsors took them off because of our philosophy and, you know, wars around the world that they didn't feel we were safe. So I learned at that point, like, whoa, what are we doing that I can't wear, you know, USA on my jacket as I'm walking around Holland? It was weird for a 20-year-old. To start thinking about some stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's transition off from field hockey. And thank you so much for sharing just, you know, your story in such an authentic manner. And truly happy belated birthday. But okay. So what did you graduate college with? What degree?
Communications.
Okay. So communications major, you went to the Olympics, totally crushing it. But I mean, what you ended up transitioning to afterwards is like, yes, I guess the, you know, if you're an athlete, you could be passionate about nutrition, but how did that evolve? And how did the story of Good Anya evolve and come about?
Well, quite the opposite, right? You probably, for some reason, I'm just guessing maybe tennis, Israel, a little bit different, but all the athletes I knew and still see ate horribly. Is a sponsor. Coca-Cola is the largest Olympic sponsor in the world globally. Yep. The food at the Olympic training centers is all factory farm, GMO disasters. It's sugar, it's carb loading when we were playing. It was just look at maybe the protein grams and the carbs, nothing to do with ingredients at all. I never looked at an ingredient list in my life until I became educated about food. So I was really bad, but you know, I was 7% body fat and I was on the Olympic team. So what was I doing wrong? I had no idea, nor were our PhD, you know, nutritionists from Penn that were involved with our team telling us any different. You know, drinking a Powerade with 40 grams of sugar multiple times a day so our performance wouldn't decrease by 50% if we became thirsty. you know, I still remember them telling us that. So I was like, whoa, you know, you got to chug this stuff. And sure, everyone's like, you could have had water, but water alone isn't enough when you're competing at that level. You need to replace your electrolytes. Little did I know I was using some of the worst electrolytes on the planet, along with all the artificial stuff and the sugar. So it was, my food education came much later in life after I became really sick. I full-blown celiac, Hashimoto's, almost type 1 diabetes. My pancreas was also under attack. Luckily, I got diagnosed before that happened with the severe autoimmunity. So that really sparked the turnaround into understanding what food was. And after retiring, you know, the restaurant world is what I call, like, that industry is just hard work and common sense. And you know now from my education, that's pretty much all I had going for me. It really wasn't, you know, had I had a business degree, I think I would have made a lot better decisions going, you know, throughout my career, but it was just an error. And I had worked in a lot of restaurants growing up, part-time jobs. So I felt like I knew a little bit about that. And that's why I started a first Good On Ya Deli was the first thing we started in 2001.
But was that in Encinitas?
It was in Kearny Mesa, actually, only a few minutes from my house in a little office park. So it was a Monday through Friday, 6 to 3 type of gig. Really smart, like at the time, you know, no weekends, no nights, no holidays. So you could go in and work super hard and then have a break, which for the restaurant industry is the opposite, you know, it's 24/7.
Yeah.
That's what I did for the first almost 12 years of my career, is just have little office park delis all over San Diego.
Oh, I love that. Let's talk about, so do you think there was a correlation to you drinking all these Powerades and like the just the sugar loaded drinks that claim to give you that energy that you needed to perform with the type 1 diabetes, Hashimoto's and celiac?
It's not a thought, it's a fact, right? I mean, your system is located in your digestive tract for the most part. So again, I go back to my common sense. They're like, oh, you have an autoimmune condition. I was like, whoa, what does that even mean? Immune system. So I start reading about this. Luckily, I got myself to a naturopathic doctor very early on because I was in Encinitas and kind of immersed in this culture here. Friends own a compounding pharmacy called La Vida, a women-owned business in Carmel Valley. And they luckily deal with a lot of naturopaths. So they're like, look, you need to go see this doctor. And she saved my life, really. You know, once you get type 1 diabetes as an adult, it's such a difficult disease. And a lot of people get confused because they're like, no, sugar's the type 2. And I'm like, I know that. But my pancreas, that organ was under attack from those antibodies from things that I was eating. So that's adult onset type 1. My thyroid was under attack. When you have autoimmune conditions, you're eating something that's causing us inflammation and your body starts recognizing it as foreign. And so it creates antibodies, and those antibodies go cruising around your body, attacking tissues and organs. So mine got attacked, my thyroid first. And that's a really common test. So luckily they had done that. But think about it, right? They're not laser focused and just going here. So the average person with one autoimmune condition can experience up to like 8 different ones in their lifetime because they're also attacking other places. So you can't just take some thyroid and think you're going to be better. You got to get to the root cause. And I had a pretty extensive organ test, and it showed all of the organs and what was being attacked. And so luckily, you know, my brain was under attack, my joints, pancreas was a really bad one. So I had to stop eating what I was eating if that was, you know, a trigger. Now, why did my body start attacking the food I was eating? That's another root cause. You can't just stop eating everything. Sure, I had to go gluten-free because I was celiac, but I was attacking the proteins in rice, in coffee. I never gave that one up. In everything, there's proteins in so many things. And so you got to also get to the root, healing the gut and all that jazz. So yes, it is a connection. You cannot eat horrible processed chemically laden food and cause the insulin response, the cortisol adrenaline response that happens after you have all that blood sugar. It's a cycle, a hormone cycle. And then you're working out 8 hours a day, physical activity, 8 hours a day, causing your body to release cortisol and adrenaline. You can't do that cycle over and over and over again and think that you're not going to have problems later. And so it's high level athletes. It's scary. I still see what they eat, but they're 20. They're chiseled. It's a really difficult message to get through to them.
Yeah. And this is something that we teach a lot. What we do is we teach movement, nutritional, and lifestyle and financial habits. And the way that we teach, we agree with you 100%. And, the problem with athletes or with people who, let's say if you're listening to this and you're not an athlete, but you just love working out because that's what most of our community is. It's like they used to be athletes, some to very high levels, and now they just work out a lot. And this concept of, just because I worked out, I can eat whatever I want. Like, no, it doesn't work that way, because you have to eat food that's aligned with a specific hormonal pathway. Otherwise, like if your hormones are creating a havoc, it's just like, like air traffic control, not having anybody basically watching what's happening. So like things are going to go out of whack, and, autoimmune disease, weight gain. I mean, weight gain is a manifestation of, misalignment. It is all a byproduct of just not putting the right foods in your body. So now let me ask you this. Were you able to reverse Hashimoto's celiac and type 1?
Well, there is a cure for autoimmune, right? So getting it in remission and feeling a lot better. Yeah, it's been a really long 10-year journey, because when you grow up drinking and eating all that sugar, I'm an addict. There's no way around it. I still want that stuff and think about that stuff all the time. I think what saves me is I don't really like drinking that much. I mean, I'll have a couple drinks occasionally, but I just don't feel good when I do it. But my thing is sugar. So I'm constantly having to like walk past the donut shop, right? Those donuts are my kryptonite. So it's a constant battle still, because that's what we grew up on. I mean, we were professional candy kids. Like everything we did, we figured out how to get money so we could go buy candy. Like from a very early age, we sold shells door to door that we collect on the beach. Like the guys in Mexico, we vacationed in Mexico a lot, because it was really, my dad would take us to San Felipe. You could camp on the beach under a palapa for like $5 a night, right? So we didn't have a lot of money growing up. And you'd see the guys walking with their felt trays in Mexico with all their little jewelry on it. So when we got home, we would get some felt and we put it on a cardboard box with the sand dollars. And we're, right, so cute. We're going door to door. Like what adult is not going to like give that kid a few bucks for like working hard and getting out there? And then we would just go buy candy. So there were certainly teammates of mine that were smarter, I think had maybe a little bit more intuition and just had water or, ate a few more vegetables than we did, but we were all about carbs for the most part.
Yeah, sure. So for those of you guys who are just jumping in, just to kind of like get you on board, nutrition obviously has an impact on your body more than just on the outside, how you look, but also how your body functions. So through your adversity, it sounds as if you became passionate about nutrition so that you can feel better, so that you can live your most epic life, right?
Yeah, I had no choice. I mean, I got to, so when I opened the restaurant, the first deli at 30, I was 30. By the time I was 35, I think we had 3. So, of course, right? Oh, we got to do another one. And you're just in this mode of go, go, go. And office park delis don't make as much money as restaurant. We don't have alcohol sales and we close at 3 or 4. So we kind of had this vision of growing the chain and then selling it. And that would be our retirement. And so at age 35-ish is when everything came crashing down. I no longer I had zero energy, got bronchitis, got sick all the time. And when I got sick, it would last like a month. My weight was going crazy. That's Hashimoto's side effect, right? I usually weigh around 125-ish and I dropped to 115. Then I would shoot up to 140. And it was so weird. I had never had that problem in my life. So yeah, that's luckily, like I said, we got it diagnosed. I don't think it was early. I think I was probably suffering for a while and just working through it. But I had started surfing, field hockey. I wanted something in my life to make me active. And I always resonated with the ocean, but I could never do it growing up because, I just was a different kind of athlete back then. So I was determined. I taught myself to surf at age 30 and I just went every day after work and I just got pounded in the white water. And then my friends started helping me. And so one day after work, I got in the car, I loaded everything up and I drove to the beach. And then I stood there and looked at the ocean and I didn't even have the energy to put my wetsuit on. And I was like, whoa, something's really wrong. And I guess I'm sick again. And I just went home and went to bed at like 3 o'clock. So I just, yeah, I'm lucky that it happened, because had I not been aware of a different path I could take, I'd probably be in a really different spot right now.
Sure. So, and also I want to bring up the concept of just being in tune with your body and being aware. I think as an athlete, something that you learn at a very young age is you're very communicative with your body at all times. So you can tell when something just doesn't feel right. But I feel like most people, for the most part, are like, they completely lack that. And just like one day they get to a point where it's like they end up at the hospital. Like they're like, I don't know what happened. So I'm glad that you caught on to it as it was just like evolving. So basically, this is how your passion for nutrition has evolved.
Yeah. I mean, when we started the deli, this was, I'm going to date myself again. This was before organic foods existed, right? Isn't that weird to think? So we were all about local. We had this 1,000 square foot space. And we thought, we're not going to fool anyone by thinking this is Good Anya's bread and Good Anya's coffee. We're not going to brand everything ourselves. So let's go the opposite route. Let's find the people who are doing the best, bring them in, and then actually highlight them. Hey, we get our coffee from here. We get our bread from here. And so we had a big list on a chalkboard. And we're like, when you support us, you also support all these other companies in San Diego. Isn't that cool? And we didn't even really... It was before local was really a thing. So we just kind of became passionate about that. And we also figured that would be the freshest, best food. But it was more about like fresh versus buying bread in a package, you know? So we got our bread delivered every day. Very cutting edge for an office park deli. They're like, whoa, what do you do with the bread the next day? Do you throw it all away? We're like, no, we use it for toast. And then we give it to our staff and they take it home. And then they get sick of having so much bread in their house. I mean... We were really good in the beginning and we were always known as the healthy place, you know, but again, I was 30. So I evolved in my food knowledge and then Good Anya evolved with the same path. And one of my employees one day walked up to me and she goes, did you know what canola oil is? And I was like, no, I have no idea. She goes, well, it's in our olive oil. And I was like, well, that's weird. She's like, yeah, I just read this article on canola oil and it's pretty frustrating. She's like, it's really pissed me off. And I was like, oh, I'll read it. So I read it and I was like, holy shit, this is not even a food. The history of canola oil is really fascinating. So we started looking for olive oil without canola oil in it. And then that literally started the journey of one ingredient and looking at the back and just starting to understand that. And then I would see something else. And I think at the time I had the internet. I mean, I wasn't going to the library. I'm not that old, right? So then I was like looking it up and reading it. And we went one by one. And that's what I tell people all the time. You know, it's all what I know now, 20 years later, has been a journey. So people can get super overwhelmed. Like I used to spend 2 hours in the toothpaste aisle, right? And I'd have my phone out. And then like my wife would never go to the store with me. I was a disaster. But then once I found my brands, then it was easy. So then I could give her a list and make her go. And she was a lot faster. Because I'd always inevitably find something new. So yeah, you just go one by one, one product at a time and learn. And that's what did it. Good Anya Encinitas, full service restaurant that we are. We don't have any office park delis anymore. That is the accumulation of, at the time, 15 years of knowledge, going and getting my holistic nutrition certificate. So 200 hours of studying. And then honestly, listening to podcasts like this, which I did for like 10 years, you know, Paul Check, Sean Croxton, all those guys. And then they would interview authors and then I would read those books. And that kind of shaped me into this ingredient-based, holistic sort of knowledge about food, just ingredients. Then I started making my own products and I went to another level when you go into a manufacturing facility and you see what processing aids they use to make the food. So we were making our organic nut and seed bar with raw honey and Celtic sea salt and coconut oil. And they're lubing the machines with organic canola oil. And I was like, okay, that's disgusting. I don't have canola oil in my product. How could you put that on the machine that's touching our dough? They're like, oh, it's a processing aid. You don't have to disclose it. And I was like, well, I don't want canola oil anywhere near our product. So we threw that whole batch away. And they're like, well, it's going to cost you more to make it. And I'm like, that's fine. what is it, like a penny when you do the difference? So they used, we had olive oil and coconut oil in our products. So they use those. And that's really opened my eyes to that whole side of things from the farming. You just started learning, right? Then I went crazy with learning because I didn't really learn before in the first half of my life. So,
yeah, and I agree with you 100%. And, you know, when it comes to your journey, like you don't know what you don't know. And that's why you have to go through experience. Like, and then once you start applying, then over time, it's going to compound. What I love is, you know, good Anya is a part of you. Like it's your life. Like a lot of, you know, business owners will say my business is my life, but like your life story is good Anya's story. And this is why I'm so intrigued by it. By the way, side note, do you know who Dr. Furman is? He's really big in the nutrition world, but when he moved to San Diego, because we interviewed him as well, we took him to your restaurant, just so you know. Because I'm like, you're going to love this place because this is so in alignment with who you are.
And he was really impressed.
He was really impressed too. Yeah.
What's his first name?
Dr. Furman.
What's his first name?
His first name.
Oh, Joel.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, that's cool. Thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. Everything. It's all about, you know, bringing together the community. Okay. So let's talk about the name Good Anya real quick. How did that come about? Isn't it an Australian thing?
Yeah. I mean, when I played, Australian women's field hockey was the best in the world. So they were like the Chicago Bulls of my generation. They won everything, super annoying. But we went down there a lot. We never beat them. We got to halftime once tied. That was like our best result against Australia. So they were just really innovative. And their coach was one of the best coaches of all time. You talk about interviewing someone. He was a lawyer. He was a doctor. He was an Olympic cricketer and field hockey player. And I believe he coached both of those teams in men and women, like Rick Charlesworth is his name. He was just a legend, obviously. And he kind of revitalized the game or transformed the game in the way it was played. And anyway, so we went down there a lot. When you are on a national team, national teams become sort of, I wouldn't say friendly, right? But hey, the way it worked is like we would fly down and then you pay to put us up and organize the games. So we had practice games all the time against them. It wasn't, you know, we traveled the world constantly all year round. And then the major tournament was maybe, you know, once a year, but we were always traveling around. So we go to Holland, we go to Argentina, and then you'd play 5 or 6 games while you're down there as practice. So we went to Australia all the time. I don't know when it happened. I think pretty early on, but I knew that I would open an Office Park deli when I retired. So I sort of had this idea that I'd open a restaurant because I worked in one when I was younger. And I thought, this guy is brilliant, right? He rolls up in his Mercedes at 10 and he works till 2 and then he goes home. Little did I know there's a lot more work than that. But as the owner, I thought he's got it really dialed in. So I would collect menus from all around the world when we traveled. And I'm sorry to all those restaurants now for stealing their menus. People steal our menus all the time and it's frustrating and expensive. And I was just always trying to think of a name as I just throughout my journeys and especially in my later times in my career. So they say Good Anya, like every other word down there. And it just sounded like a healthy, fun name versus like Chris's Deli or something. So that's what it became.
Side note, we have an Australian acquaintance, Dr. Adam's wife. She's Australian. And she's like, yeah, I think the owner is from Australia because of the name. And, you know, she told us about Good Anya. But now I'm going to tell her, I'm like, no, she's not Australian. Because we weren't sure if you're like local or not, but obviously you are. So this is really cool.
It's actually Jeff's nephew's wife.
Yes. Uh-huh. I'm curious. As a business owner, just because the integrity of your place it's so high and it's so rare. And that's why, you know, we truly value what you do. But I'm curious, what are Good Anya's core values?
You know, I just sort of rewrote them, right? Even after 20 years, the food has almost become second to me because I already have that dialed in. So the only other thing, you know, they have to make it correctly, which there's reasons why we don't always do that. It's a challenging environment, but it's service and kindness. That's kind of what we, you know, you can have the best food in the world and crappy service and your restaurant won't make it. You can have average food and amazing service and you'll make it and you'll do really, really well. So I already figured the food part out. So I teach them, you know, you don't even have to sell our customers. You just have to inform them of what we have because our customers come, they're super excited. They are already, a lot of them are already educated. That's why they're there. So it's just about being really nice. And the whole feel good thing, which has become our little tagline, that evolved from our customers telling us when they ate there, how good they felt after. And so we realized in speaking how much we were saying those two words, feel good. And I still do it now in natural conversation all the time. And so that became our biggest core value, is give our guests the experience where they feel good. And you don't have to be the most outgoing. You can literally just smile at them. But this started a while ago in our office park setting. We played fun music and we had these corporate people coming down out of, you know, we're in the lobby and they would come down and sometimes they're miserable, right? They're punching a clock. They're on the phone for 8 hours a day. They get a 30-minute break. So I was like, we should be like a source of happiness in their life when they have this little break. And then, of course, everyone wants to eat in those same 30 minutes. So it was a really stressful time. And so at the time we had, everyone had a number. So we'd be like number 85, number 86. And we would like call up these numbers and throw their sandwich at them. So I was like, okay, guys, we have to at least say thank you. Number 85, thank you. So they'd be like, thank you. Number 86, thank you. And I'm like, okay, that's not working. So how about this? We don't have to say anything, but you literally have to smile at them. So the smiling thing started like 15 years ago, just because we were trying to be a nice part of their day. And that it started too with music's always been really important to me. So getting music that the staff liked, so they like to be at work and they were happy. But that started because I worked really young and I liked music when I was working. So I kind of always knew my staff would like that. And I worked in a deli at Safeway at the beach when I was young. And I worked after field hockey practice till 11 o'clock at night. If I didn't have a game, I worked. And I wasn't allowed music, but no one was in the grocery store. So I would take my clock radio and I would plug it in. And then when the manager would walk by, he'd walk by and unplug it, or she would actually. And then she did her job and went away. I became friends with her and I'd plug it right back in. So I learned that my staff wouldn't always do what I say, would try to get away with things like, because I did too, but just try to make them happy so they're happy, so the customers are happy.
I love it.
Yeah.
So I got one more question for you. Let's talk about the vision for Good Anya. Like, where do you see it and yourself? Because it's a part of you in 5 years and 10 years.
You know, I mean, I would love the restaurant to always carry on. Do I always want to run the restaurant? No. It's a emotional time suck. I mean, it's a really relentless business. People are like, oh, I dreamed of owning a restaurant. I'm like, no, you don't. You dream of sitting in there on your cafe and like being friends with everyone that comes in. Like, that's a lovely part. But you do not dream of breaking refrigerators and clogging drains and baristas that don't show up. And, you know, you just don't dream of that. So we're making products again, and we make our Good Anya Hydrate product, and it's doing really, really well. So I would like to kind of create products out of the restaurant. And then that's where I really focus my time. So I'm not in the restaurant very often, and trying to get that e-commerce business going and do that for another 5-10 years. And hopefully, you know, be able to sell it to someone that could take it to another level. Lots of bigger organic companies now are buying smaller organic companies versus selling to Coca-Cola or a company like that. But even so, you know, those big companies that are buying the little ones are able to scale them as long as you keep the integrity of the ingredients and the processing process, I think it's okay. So a lot of brands don't do that. The ingredients get, you know, kind of put down to level two and the brand gets degraded. So you'd have to really try to put into place practices that would protect the integrity of the ingredients. That's all. That's my goal. That's my goal. So then I can, and I probably honestly would sell the product side, but not the restaurant side. That's not really appealing to people who are going to buy something. And I think I would give it to the staff or someone that wants, some sucker that would just want to keep it going and run it. Because I need somewhere to eat. I'm actually a horrible cook. I know how to source ingredients, but the whole putting of everything together is not my strong suit. So we DoorDash from our restaurant most nights. It's shocking.
Well, it's a great place to DoorDash from, I can tell you that. Side note, before we let all the audience know where they can find more info about Good Anya, because I definitely want them to check you guys out, is I do want to reach out to you later. I do have a question for you. I have an idea, but we can talk about it afterwards. But for anybody who's listening, you know, whether you're in SoCal, most of our audience, by the way, are like spread all around the country. We do have some like in Australia and New Zealand and in the UK, but most are in the US and then a few are in Canada. But, you know, whether somebody is local or not, where can they, you know, learn more about Good Anya, the story and the products that you guys have?
Yeah, I mean, goodanyaorganic.com is our website. We have a pretty cool blog, and we did an immune series during COVID that I'm really proud of. And you'll, after listening to me talk, you'll understand me a little bit more, and it's written in a very casual, real way, which is how we try to be for our brand. So I'm not a professional writer, but I really like all those blog posts that we did. So it's the immunity series. And I think you guys will resonate with it. It's not just about, you know, eat broccoli and carrots. There's so much more to keeping your immune system strong. So definitely check that out. We're also on Amazon, except for right now, because they're such a frustrating company. It's such a shit show to launch something on Amazon. And we've been on for a year and we sell really, really well. And then all of a sudden our listing will be taken down because we get misclassified as a pesticide, or we make like a disease health claim. Right now, they just took us down because we said that our product is great for hydration. It's literally called Good Anya Hydrate. It's a hydration electrolyte powder. So we're making a disease claim. So there's all of these bots on Amazon that kind of run your copy on your page. And so if you go to Amazon right now, we're not there. But probably like one of the best things you could do to support us would be to buy it on Amazon at least once and leave a review. It's such a game, the whole review process. It really infuriates me. Yelp and all this passive aggressiveness and just the way we have stopped being able to communicate with ourselves. I could really rant for a whole hour on reviews, but you need them to grow on Amazon. It's the number one factor. So it's an awesome product. You need it in your life to help you hydrate. It's so good. I'm so proud of it. But yeah, that's a place you can find us too. Probably.
And it is delicious. Aaron is looking for a link right now to drop it in the chat box. By the way,
I want every single one of you to buy it and leave a review.
Thanks. Yeah.
And it is delicious, you guys, by the way. Like every time we go there, we get it.
Okay.
So we love it.
This one? Hydration multiplier. Is it like a blue, green, aqua pack?
That's liquid IV. Where are you now?
It's the yellow bottles, right?
No. So it's goodanyaorganic.com and then the hydrate page.
Oh, I was looking for it on Amazon.
Oh yeah. So no, we're pulled down right now because of
the stupid plan
side or something.
So goodanyaorganic.com. I'm not sure if this is me just like doing, like looking some things up at the end of the day when my brain power is at like 2% battery juice, but Good Anya, when it's spelled out, it's with an A, but on your Instagram, it's with an O, right? So it's Good Anya Organic or Anya, like O on.
No, it's Good Anya Organic. I think the A and the O just look close together. So
it's good. I'm going to drop it right now. O N Y A.
I have it right.
Karen's got the link. She's going to drop it.
There it is.
Good Anya's been a blessing and a curse because it's a mouthful to say. People say Good Anya all the time. People think my name is Anya, you know, like it happens all the time. So we actually made our electrolyte drink in a bottle when we first started, and we were in Whole Foods and all these stores. And we changed the name to 1051 by Good Anya so people could say it. And that's our address at the restaurant. So we tried to, this whole thing where we tied it together, it was a big flop. No one got it. But I was so sick of Good Anya after 15 years of trying to explain it to people that were like, I'm done. Let's call it something else. But it's a great name. It's a good, and then feel good and the whole good thing. So makes sense if we can get it out there.
I love it. Well, we will do everything that we can to support you. And I do want to connect with you later because I do have a question that I would love to ask you. But other than that, thank you so much for your time this morning. Thank you for sharing your own life story. And thank you for sharing the story of Good Anya For those of you guys who are listening to this on podcast or watching this on YouTube or are with us live, thank you so much for taking your time this morning to, you know, just listen to another courageous, raw, real, and authentic conversation. If you are traveling to Southern California, especially the SoCal area, then definitely be sure to stop at Good Anya. It's located in Encinitas. Look, you guys, it's literally like it is our favorite spot. Like whether we want to grab a coffee or some food, like Erin and I always go for Good Anya because that place is just authentic. And there's just so much thought that goes into anything and everything, whether it's the cashew milk that's in the latte or like the Thai salad. It's just, it's all really, really incredible. And also like the setting is beautiful. But other than that, Chris, thank you so much for your time this morning. And you guys, thank you so much for your time as well. This was lovely. And I'm wishing you guys all a beautiful weekend.
Yeah. By the way, Chris, our chief of happiness officer just messaged and she said, hey, our whole team should go there when we come out for Thanksgiving.
So we are going to take you guys there. You think that wasn't planned already?
Yes. Tell me so I can make sure we have room for you.
Yes, definitely. I'm gonna connect with you. I do have a couple of questions for you. But you guys, thank you so much. Have a beautiful day. Chris, thank you for your time.
Thank you, everyone.
Have a great day, you guys, and have a beautiful week.
Thank you for listening to Espresso with Erin and Sarit. On your way out, be sure to check out our website, erinandsarit.com, to keep up to date with what we have going on and maybe grab some free stuff.
And if you feel so inclined, hop on over to leave us a 5-star review, wink, wink. And remember, life is more fun when you subscribe to Erin and Sarit.